This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. One person, one vote. That's the charge of the U.S. Constitution. But how do you achieve that goal? I mean, who gets to draw the district lines and how should those maps be designed? Well, in North Carolina, like many other states, the party in power controls the redistricting process with little incentive to set those boundaries in a way that might jeopardize their seats. But a movement by the NC Coalition for Lobbying and Government Reform is trying to turn that power over to a nonpartisan commission. So let's find out more about it. We're joined by two participants in that effort to end gerrymandering in North Carolina. Richard Vinroot is a Republican, former mayor of Charlotte. He joins us from our sister station, WFAE. Richard Vinroot, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be with you.
Charles Meeker is a Democrat, former mayor of Raleigh, and he is with us as well. Hello, Charles Meeker. How are you?
Well, Frank, glad to be here.
And, of course, the political junkie Ken Rudin still with us. So, Richard Vinroot, let's talk a little bit about this this initiative. Give us a sense of what you're talking about, nonpartisan redistricting. How does that work?
Well, it works in a number of states, and Iowa being one of those, where basically you take the Republican and Democratic hands off of the redistricting process, and every 10 years when you redistrict, you do it in a nonpartisan way. And what we hope to do is put it in our Constitution so it's not something that's vulnerable to whoever controls the legislature 10 years from now. We know who controls it now. I'm a Republican. I'm real happy about that. But for most of the years before we took control, most Republicans that I know were trying to get something like this established.
Charles Meeker, can a thing like this really work? Is there such a thing as a nonpartisan process?
There certainly is. You can have independent people. You can have guidelines in terms of competitive and compact districts. You can have things you can't consider, such as party affiliation or incumbent seats. It works in other states. There's no reason it can't work here.
Ken Rudin, give us a sense of kind of where it works and how it works. Have any of these other nonpartisan efforts been around long enough for us to make a judgment?
No, it's new, and I think the reason it's new is because there has been a lot of outrage in so many states saying that this partisanship, and Richard Vinroot is right, exactly right, it didn't just start when the Republicans took over in North Carolina. Democrats have been doing it for years, and you could go back to years of Democratic redistricting in California and Illinois, where the Republicans got wiped out. But, of course, the Republicans, having come to the ascendancy in 2010, they've learned the ways of the game, and they're doing just fine. Thank you. But in states like Arizona and Iowa and now California, which they changed the redistricting rules because of a ballot initiative, it's regardless of political partisanship. It's independent commissions that are redrawing the lines, and not all the Republicans are happy and not all the Democrats are happy. But I think some of the districts that are being drawn make much more sense. I mean, we always talk about the famous Mel Watt 12th District in North Carolina that looks like, you know, the varicose veins on my legs. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But of course, in many other states, they're compacted. It's not designed to defeat or elect a member of either party.
Richard Vinroot, how do you keep political pressure from affecting whatever process it is you make? You can use the word nonpartisan, but certainly the parties aren't going to just sit around with their hands behind their back hoping for the best, right?
Well, no, they aren't going to do that. But we, you know, if you do something and it doesn't work, you can change it, of course. Mm-hmm. But the problem we have is that we've now, and this is the part that I want to talk about, and that is that we've gerrymandered ourselves into a nation, frankly, that has very few congressional elections that are truly contested. We have legislative seats in this state and many states where there are very few real elections. I think we're down to maybe 15 or 20% of the legislature will go through real honest-to-goodness elections in November. Most everybody else was elected when the filing ended and then when the primaries ended. And we've disenfranchised all but the most extreme right and extreme left people.
Charles Meeker, do you concur? Is that part of the reason you've signed on for this?
No question about it. You know, we have 170 seats in our legislature, 50 in the Senate, 120 in the House. And of those 78, we'll have only one name on the ballot this November, just one name. And the remaining seats, only 15 or 20 at most, will have the potential to be competitive. So as Richard says, the bottom line is people really have lost their right to vote in state legislative elections here in North Carolina.
Now, we heard, in fact, earlier this week on this program, we talked to Art Pope a little bit about that. And he said, well, look, we're just trying to comply with the Voting Rights Act that forces us to, in some ways, make sure that we don't disperse, in this case, African-American voters, so that we keep them all in one place. Charles Vinroot, I'll start with you. Is compliance with the Voting Rights Act in any way interfering with a more fair process?
I suspect you meant to say Charles Meeker.
Charles, I'm sorry. Charles?
I don't think so. I think there are some issues there, but the main problem here is it's being done on a partisan basis, first by the Democrats in my party. We certainly are responsible, and now by the Republicans in control. And that's the reason you have all these precincts split. You have these very odd-shaped districts throughout the state, and you have the elections that just don't make sense. So I think, you have to comply with federal law, but that's not what driving the process right now.
Richard Vinroot, what would be the process in the state of North Carolina? Would we have to leave this up to legislators who are in power now?
Well, we'd have to have the legislature, if we do it now, we have to have the legislature that's in power now bless it and put before the people of this state a constitutional amendment. They do that on a not regular basis, but on an occasional basis when they think something needs to be changed in our Constitution. But, yeah, it starts there, and that means Republicans have got to now think it's a good idea when they're in power. That's a little more difficult. They were mostly all for it when they were out of power, when we were out of power. And it's going to take some people who are, I think, big people, frankly, to do something that it's not in their self-interest to take away their power right now or take away the potential. But the fact is, this wouldn't take place for another almost decade if we did decide to do it today. And who knows going to be in charge another 7 or so years from now?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Ken Rudin, I mean, in some ways, if you're in power now and you've gerrymandered these lovely districts that favor your party, but you have any sense that you might not win 10 years hence, then you'd be calling for a fair playing field, right? A level playing field now, right? Because I've got it the way I want. Level playing field doesn't make things as bad as what the Democrats would do. So it's kind of a gamble, right?
It is, but it's a perfect example might be the states of Texas or Georgia, where demographics are changing very rapidly, not so rapidly that Democrats are going to take over the governorship of the two states or the state legislature, but the influx of African-Americans and Latinos and Asians in states like Texas and Georgia may very well jeopardize Republican control that it seems to be so dominant today. Let me just say one quick thing about what Richard said earlier. He said that very few districts have been contested, and historically that's true. But if you look at the wave elections of 2006, 2008, and 2010, many very safe members of Congress were defeated when nobody expected it. So, I mean, that may have been aberrations. But even more importantly than just having safe, fair elections, what these redistricted seats mean is that they're so safe that the incumbents don't have to reach across the party aisle. They don't have to moderate their votes from the left or the right because they're so safe. And that's, to me, what the real crime is.
And there's also go ahead. Is that Richard?
Charles has heard me do this, so forgive me, Charles, doing it again. Let me give you a quick little metaphor for this, if that's the right phrase. 50-some years ago, my uncle was the campaign manager for a man who ran for Congress named Charlie Jonas. Mr. Jonas was elected in the Eisenhower election of 52, along with one Republican in Alabama. Those are the only two Republicans elected in the South in maybe 100 years. Thereafter, for the next 20 years, while Mr. Jonas was a very fine congressman, the Democrats in the legislature tried to gerrymander him about every 2 years. He kept making Republicans out of a lot of Democrats because he was a darn good congressman. But here's the point. When he went to Congress, he would stop in Tarboro and pick up Mr. L.H. Fountain, who was a prominent Democratic congressman, and they'd drive to Washington. They next-door neighbors. They were conservatives, but they were friends, and they talked to each other. Let me move forward 50 years. Martin Lancaster's a good friend of mine. He was a Democratic congressman from Goldsboro. I was at a class reunion in Chapel Hill a year ago, and Martin and his wife were telling me about going back to Washington after he left Congress maybe 10 years ago or more, and sitting down with a group of Republicans in the House dining room, and afterwards when they walked out, some of their colleagues still there chastised them for sitting with those people. And Martin was himself, I think, stunned at how much had changed since he had left there. We've gone 50 years for people who rode to Congress together in the same car of different parties to people who now don't even sit down at the table together without being criticized. That's what's happened to partisanship in Washington and in our state. They don't talk to each other much.
They don't need to. Excellent big policy, big picture policy case for for nonpartisan redistricting. I'm a Republican now. I'm sitting in this chair trying to be reelected, and I've watched the Democrats draw these maps against us for decades. I'm now in power, and people are all of a sudden calling for fair maps after decades of this kind of mistreatment. Furthermore, I think as a public policy matter, having Republicans control government is the best thing for our state and our nation. What's the incentive for Republicans in power now to make this change? And I'll stick with you, Richard.
Well, first of all, it's not gonna stick. As was said a minute ago by Ken, demographics change, things change, and so I can assure you that for another 50 years, we're not going to remain in control, much as I'd like for that to happen as a Republican. So that's the first reason. It ain't a sure thing. Secondly, it ain't right. It's not good for us. It's not good for our people. We wouldn't teach our children tonight at the dinner table that the way we ought to play ball games is stack the deck so we always win or don't lose. That makes no sense. In our lives, we know that. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not good.
Charles Meeker, how do you make the case, and to whom do you make the case? I'm guessing you've got a lot of the public on your side, or a fair number. Who are you pitching this campaign to?
Well, you're right. Gerrymandering is extremely unpopular with the public. Really, it's the state Senate that needs to come around on this and take a vote. The state House actually has a lot of support. But I think Richard's point is very well taken. That is, the election of 2010 showed that one side can't control this forever. The Democrats thought they could, and they were wrong. And if the Republicans think, well, we're going to control it for sure in 2020 or 2030, that's not right. So it's actually in the self-interest of both parties to go ahead and have fair districts so that both sides can participate in the government of the state going forward and not just have one side.
Ken Rudin, in states, you know, you heard the process in this state. The legislature has to pass this and then get it to the people in order to make a change. In other states, California, I believe it began as an initiative. In those states where there has been a change, where did it start and how did it get through?
Well, I think in California, for example, if you go from, I'm just saying off the top of my head, but between 1984 and 2000, I think there may have been three total members of the California congressional delegation defeated. Those districts were so safe that there was just nobody jeopardized. And there were a lot of just legislators and voters who said this is not democracy in action. What bothers me the most, I understand the partisanship of redistricting, and I understand the reasons why partisan legislatures will draw them to reelect their own members. What does bother me is the legislatures that will discourage voting, per se, not even just the drawing of lines, but making it so difficult to vote. I know this is a different subject here, but if we want democracy, if we want true democracy, and we want democratically drawn lines, small d democratically, you also have to make sure that everybody has the same opportunity to vote, and to put these roadblocks in that we're seeing from more and more legislatures is really another part of the problem that should be addressed.
Of course, what we haven't said is that in the 2012 election, for instance, we know that more Americans voted for Democrats than Republicans in House races, and yet the House is in the hands of the Republicans. So in a lot of ways, you know, the argument is pretty easy for each of you, Charles and Richard, about why it's wrong. So what's the strategy going forward? Charles Meeker, let me start with you in terms of your campaign.
Well, the first thing is to get a lot of support, and we've got over 75 mayors, both big cities and small towns, behind us, and sort of get some public support. Secondly, there already is strong support in the state house, so that's not the problem. The challenge is to get a hearing and a vote in the state senate on the bill to put the constitutional amendment on the ballot, and that's what we're going to try to do is develop support for that over the next 6 or 8 months and see if that can't be considered in 2015, so it would go on the ballot in 2016.
Do Democrats, do you think, have to give something up? Do they have to sort of come to the table with some kind of premium in order for this to go forward?
You know, I haven't really heard that discussed, and I'm not sure what that would be. The districts would be drawn independently, either by legislative staffs or by independent commission, would not be drawn by either side or not drawn by partisan people. I'm not sure what the Democrats could give up at this point, since they really don't have anything, since they're in such small numbers in the General Assembly, but certainly be willing to discuss that if there's something worth talking about.
Oh, they could promise to run campaigns the way they did in 2010 for the first cycle, for instance. Just a joke. Just a joke.
Well, that would be interesting, though. Either side's going to handicap themselves.
Richard, what about this? You know, we talked about the fact that you do seem to have the public on your side. The Senate seems to be where you want to focus your attention. But, of course, the Senate is sensitive to popular, popular demand and popular sentiment. Is there a way in which bringing the people to the Senate is part of your plan?
Well, I don't know about that. I know that most of the senators that are friends of mine, whom I'm glad are now in charge, don't like the idea right now. And Tom Apodaca, who's a good friend, I think criticized me for supporting it a couple of weeks ago publicly and said, where was Richard 4 or 5 years ago? Well, he's right. I wasn't talking about it 4 or 5 years ago. But I'm talking about it now because I think it's right. By the way, back to the point you made a minute ago. It works both ways. In 1992, Republicans got 50% plus of the votes cast for North Carolina senators in the legislature, and they got only 30% of the seats. That's 1992. Fast forward to 2012, 20 years later, Democrats got 50-plus percent of the votes for the North Carolina Senate seats, and they got only 30% of the seats. So what we had, if we had fair districts, would probably be a more 50-50 legislature, I suspect. That's not something I want right now. I like the Republicans being in charge. But I do want it to be, in the future, a legislature that's elected by a lot of people. I don't want a legislature elected by a few folks in the spring, 15%, as opposed to 60 or plus percent in the fall, and we have real discussions and real elections. That's back to my metaphor of baseball or basketball or whatever. I want a fair game, not a stacked deck. Now, I like it when I win, but I'd rather win fairly.
Richard, that was actually a mixed metaphor. I don't want to be the one to tell you.
You're right.
It was.
You're right. Man, you can't do that, can you?
You can work out.
I threw two sports in there, too. You can't even do that,
That's great. Well, listen to Ken in a minute. You'll have five metaphors inside of 30 seconds. Because, okay. Ken, I'm going to ask you this question about discouraged voters. I mean, on the one hand, all of this does, in some ways, suppress the vote, give voters a sense that, you know, the deck is stacked and there's no way that we can win at this game. Does it mean that voters have more or less given up on this? Or can this be a successful campaign? Is this something that could ignite popular support and, you know, sort of ignite maybe a pitchfork rebellion to see this thing through? What do you think, Ken?
Well, there are two states, for example, New Jersey and California, which have been run by Democrats for quite some time. And yet in those Democratic states, these changes have been instituted. Republican states like Iowa and Arizona also went through the changes, and they've instituted new changes on the way congressional districts are drawn. And in all four states, despite who the majority party is, it seems to be working. The parties are not crazy about it. The partisans are not crazy about it. But the voters seem to like it more. They seem to, it's more fair. And when you look at, I mean, Dave, speaking of metaphors, Dave Brat could be one of the metaphors. In a fair election cycle, when everybody has a shot, you know, there could be more and more Mr. Smiths or Mr. Brats coming to Washington. How's that for a metaphor? I said subterraneally.
I actually don't think that was a metaphor either, but it was a great discussion, and I want to thank all of you for it. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, Charles Meeker, former mayor of Raleigh and a Democrat, thank you, and Richard Vinroot, former Republican mayor of Charlotte, who joined us from WFAE. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Just ahead, music of the American Dance Festival from South Africa. Stay with us.